We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning, I'm Celeste Quinn. The program is produced by Harriet Williamson. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Today we open the phone lines for questions about computers. This is a topic we take up once a month on the first Thursday of the month. Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick of CITES join us this month. CITES is the acronym for the University of Illinois' Campus Information Technologies and Education Services. Jim Eyrick is a wireless network designer at CITES. Debbie Flieger is a network engineer at CITES. Listeners, you can join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Will, and our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Debbie, Jim, good to see you again. Welcome back. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We already have a couple of folks waiting to talk with you, so let's go and take our first call. This is a listener in McLean County on line one. Hi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and I'll make this as brief as I can because it really made me really nervous yesterday. I was doing my, update for my antivirus, and something came up. It's called ATI Desktop Control Panel, and what it basically is, the app. That's what the application, and then I kind of looked at it. Says object was kernel mode, memory patch. Reason was action selected according to setting, which I changed. Eventually, figured out where to find it. The result was allowed a PDM keylogger, and that made me really nervous. I finally somehow, don't ask me how I figured, actually I called a friend for help, and then so I ran a Windows One Care, and whatever came up I just said fix it. But then I found it where it's on the firewall. I blocked it, ATI Desktop Control Panel. There are two of them there, so I blocked them. And that it also shows up, if I can close this, in the proactive defense in setting area, except I don't know how to remove these from my computer. And I did contact the antivirus people, and they are very difficult to communicate with, let's put it this way. And that's, anyway, so what can I do, and am I being panicky, or because I don't want anyone to pick up my password from my keyboard?
Well, the ATI Desktop Control Panel is something might be masquerading as it, but that certainly is a normal tool on a computer with a ATI video card in it.
Okay.
You could look under. I mean, it's not necessary to have that installed for Windows to operate. So you could go into add the programs in Windows and try to add remove. It should be listed as ATI Desktop. Utilities or something similar to that, and you could just remove that. There are certain advantages you get from having that software installed, things that you can do with your video card, and color corrections and things that cannot be done otherwise or are more difficult to do. So you may, if you think that copy is bad for some reason, you can uninstall it, make sure that you're not getting any more of your errors from your antivirus or anything, and then go to ATI's actual website and download the newest version and reinstall it, which should then ask you, it'll either do it automatically or it may ask you if it has your permission to install the desktop app and then reinstall it.
Okay, so what you're saying is that these key loggers, what happened was actually had a yellow warning sign attached to it. That's why I called.
Well, see, it was your antivirus that said that it detected that as a key logger. That doesn't necessarily mean it's actually a key logger.
Okay.
I've seen that before where a program that I absolutely know what it is, the antivirus signature software sees something that's in the bits of that program or in the coding of that program, the software, the antivirus goes, well, that matches one of the definitions I have for this bad file, and it gives you an alarm. But those are false positives, and those do happen. So that may be what actually happened in this case, in that your machine wasn't actually infected.
So it wasn't possibly infected. It's just that...
That's certainly possible that it wasn't. Again, you can start by just going to the ATI, going to your ad remove programs and seeing if you can if there's a ATI ad remove and do that, and then rescan your machine and see what happens. And then you'll know you can download a good copy of the ATI desktop control panel from ATI's website for your video card and install it, and that will be a known good copy. That should not have, I mean, I guess if ATI's system's been compromised, we have a problem, but... Otherwise, in general, if you go to the manufacturer's website and download the newest driver, then it will not be infected because it came from a known good source.
Okay. So I do need ATI, right?
Well, again, not necessarily. The control panel gives you things to do with your desktop and your video card that you can't normally do through the standard Windows control panels, but the machine should function without it if you don't want to have the control panel installed.
Okay. All right. And then these, where I have it, like in the, what they call it, this virus program says, antivirus says, proactive defense, and has like some with red, you know, basically saying these are, I'll call them the worst of the three in terms of danger. They have several of them. How do I, like, some says worm-like activity, and then it does, I don't know if you know all the antiviruses out there. Do you know how I remove the actual program from these?
To remove what program?
Whatever they're highlighting.
They should, if you can do it under add remove, otherwise you may have to go through, you may have to dig it out. You may need a computer technician to go through and actually clean that out. And there are instructions. If you know exactly which virus or worm you've been infected with, you can usually go to and search the internet, and somebody has written up instructions on how to get rid of it.
Yeah, see, these don't tell you, because one says worm-like activity, another one says hidden object. One says Trojan-like activity.
Well, if they don't actually tell you what it is besides that, what program is actually telling you this?
Kaspersky, is that the correct?
Sure, okay. Yeah. You should be able to click, and it'll tell you what the executable or the actual computer object is that is raising that alarm. It should tell you where it's installed or where it found it, not just say, I found some worm-like activity.
It doesn't, but...
I suggest finding a different antivirus, because that's not good that your antivirus is just saying, I found these things, but not telling you any specifics.
As a matter of fact, I sent them an email yesterday saying that they need to be working like some other antiviruses. I'll never buy this again. It was tutored, and I think it's for people who are geeks, you know, who really, technology experienced, you know?
Sure. No offense taken.
Yeah.
Then you might try, you could uninstall that and use Microsoft Security Essentials. It is a free product provided by Microsoft for, I'm not sure what the oldest version of Windows it'll run on. I know it runs on Windows 7 and Windows Vista.
Ooh, I have XP.
I think it actually may work on XP. You'd have to go to the website and see. You most likely will need to have at least Service Pack 2 or 3 installed. But I've had good luck with Security Essentials, and that is a malware and antivirus software package.
Okay, it's Microsoft Security Essentials, and you said 1, 2, 3, what was that?
Oh, you may need, and it'll tell you this. If you go to install it, it'll say, sorry, I can't install because you don't meet the minimum required. You may need Service Pack 2 for Windows XP before you can run it, which I'm hoping that you actually are running at least Service Pack 3 on your machine.
Okay.
Those are, that you can do through the Windows updates to make sure you have all the newest security and critical patches for Windows.
Okay. And that is free completely? And
absolutely.
And it does a daily update and does a daily...
You can choose, those are options, when you can choose those things. I think it does quick scans once a day and full scans once a week, but I believe that by default that all those settings are tunable.
Okay, because I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was thinking, you know, I spend way more money on this than I've ever done on any antivirus. So what I'm thinking is maybe next year not purchase one and just use Microsoft Security, And if you want to, and I'll hang up, and if you want, if you have time, if you can mention other antivirus programs that you could use that are free online, if at all possible.
There's not actually, Microsoft Security Essential is the only one off the top of my head that I install on machines that are free. We use the ones at work that are McAfee, and I've worked with some clients that use Sophos. Again, neither one of those are free products.
Right, yeah, and Norton's is not.
And, well, right, and Norton's not free.
How about, like, AVI or something like that that people used to mention?
There's AVG.
OVG, sorry.
And they have free and not free versions. Mm-hmm. When Microsoft released Security Essentials, I stopped using AVG free and started using Security Essentials.
Okay, all right, great. Thank you very, very much.
Okay. Good luck, and we're going to take another call here in just a second, but as we're already 17 minutes into the 11 o'clock hour, let me just mention that this is Focus, and this morning we're talking about computers. Jim Irick and Debbie Flieger of Sites at the University of Illinois are with us. My name is Celeste Quinn. So let's go now and take another call. This is a listener in St. Joseph on line two. Hi.
Good morning. Just listening to the last 17 minutes of the caller's questions and Jim's explanations just makes me realize how complicated this whole thing is. I'm amazed. On that Microsoft Security Essentials, I have a recently purchased Windows 7 operating system. Would that have been automatically installed before I got the system?
I do not believe that it is.
It's not. Oh.
I think that Windows 7 comes with, and I'm not positive all this, but at one time they started adding in the malware software package from Microsoft, but Security Essentials was not installed by default.
Oh.
There's so, probably, if they tried to do that, somebody, some antivirus company would get upset and take them to court. So it's definitely a user, as far as I know, it's a user download and install.
So I just Google Microsoft Security Essentials?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Or you can use Bing if you want to use a Microsoft product to search for a Microsoft product.
Okay, good. So I have several procedure questions, not as complicated as what she had. First, I have a McAfee antivirus and firewall protection. And people have told me about installing SpyBot in addition to that for more spyware protection. I'm just wondering if that isn't redundancy, and is that really necessary to install SpyBot?
Okay. There are times when I recommend SpyBot, and there are times I don't. For myself, I don't click on a lot of the bad things in email. I have good spam filters, so I don't see a lot of it either. I don't click on web links that I'm concerned about and things like that. And I've never, knock on wood here, had a machine that's been seriously infected by spyware or anything downloaded from the web or through an email. So for myself, I do not install that, and I don't want it using up CPU cycles and processing power of my machine.
Yeah.
Then I have, as customers, that are about every couple of months, I end up spending some time cleaning off their machine full of spyware and stuff. In those cases, I do recommend, and apparently, and antivirus software, originally, now some of the newer ones, as we had previous callers call in and point out to me, the newer ones actually advertise that they're anti-worm, anti-spyware, in addition to antivirus, and malware in general, is that at one time the antivirus programs were only for antivirus. They were not actually anti-spyware.
Right.
So then, but some of the newer ones, and I think McAfee's included in this, include the anti-spyware stuff. So it all depends what you think. If you don't believe that you're prone to being infected with spyware and things and you have an antivirus that says that it's anti-spyware, I would not install a second package.
Okay.
Only if you suspect a problem would I then install a second package and do a complete scan of the machine.
Okay, that's good. Next question is, what is the importance of logging off or signing off from a website prior to closing?
I don't. If it's my personal computer, I don't. If you're at the library or some shared public machine, you do, because basically the log on and log off is usually a cookie that's being set with some sort of identification that's part of that website. So when you go to that website, somebody visits that website, it looks for that cookie on your machine. If the cookie exists, it says, yeah, and it's, you know, it's this user from St. Joe, and here's his password or temporary password, here's his, you know, his session key, whatever, that allows you to have access to the website. Basically just as if you typed in your username and password.
Okay.
So on your home machine, I personally find it very convenient to not have to log into web pages all the time. But if you're on a public machine anywhere or even a friend's machine, you would want to log off just so when they go to log in, they're not doing anything under your username.
Okay, so it's not necessary if I'm just using my desktop at home.
In my opinion, no.
Yeah, okay, and that's good. And how frequently would you recommend to defragment my Windows 7 operating system? I used to do it like every month with my Windows 98.
I don't think I've ever done it on my new Windows 7 desktop.
Oh.
So, yeah, I haven't even concerned myself with it. I know that the newest Windows file systems are much better at defrag, or the whole problem of fragmentation, than the older ones we did. I mean, I remember with an MS-DOS machine or maybe Windows 3.1 that, you know, that was a ritual that you did, you know, every Friday or Saturday night when before you left the house to go out partying or something, is, you know, start the defrag so it could have the 12 hours it needed to finish by the next morning when you wanted to use the machine again.
Yeah.
But anymore, I don't even worry about it usually.
Oh, that's good to know. Just because it's more effective operating system?
A part of it is the new file system. The newest versions of the NTF file system, I think, do better. And, yeah, I think in general they've just improved that it's not as necessary as it used to be. Plus, I think we also get the point where on our older machines, we really tried to squeeze every bit of performance out of them because there wasn't a lot there to begin with. And on newer machines, you're not taxing the CPU very often. You're probably not taxing your hard drive's fastest I/O speed very often. And we just don't recognize that, man, I really want to spend 12 hours defragging my hard drive so I can get it to run 5% faster than it did yesterday, kind of stuff. So to me, unless you recognize a problem, I wouldn't worry about it.
Great, great. One last question. The other night I was with some friends. We were looking at Firefox, at the add-ons that are available through Firefox. And I was astounded at all the options that you can add on to that browser. And I just wondered, do you know whether these are really helpful or are they problematic?
I think you can find both. First of all, you want to make sure when you're doing an add-on that it's coming from a reputable download or that it comes recommended, because I don't see any reason that somebody couldn't make one that did something nefarious or cause problems on your machine. There's not very many add-ons that I use. I think the best place is if you find somebody recommending that it works well to give it a go. For the ones, most of them, I doubt if they'll cause permanent damage. If there's a problem with them, you just uninstall them and move on. There's a few that I like. I don't know if Debbie has. I like, there's a anti-spam one that is, or an anti-pop-up ad one that's really good. That's about, and there's a one that changes the behavior of how tabs work that I download called, I think, Tabs Plus. Those are about the only two I use. I don't know if Debbie has any favored Firefox add-ins.
No, I mostly use Safari, so I don't bother too much with the Firefox ones.
You don't, pardon me?
I use a different browser, so I don't know much about the Firefox.
Oh, I see.
So I just went and looked. The add-ons that I personally have installed right now are AdBlock Plus. I find that very useful. And Tab Mix Plus.
Tab Mix?
Yeah, M-I-X Plus. That one does some stuff where you can protect tabs and auto load. Some of that stuff's actually been built into the newest versions of Firefox, as opposed to when we were using it, you know, 2 years ago. But AdBlock Plus I find that very useful.
Okay, great. Thanks enough. It takes plenty of time. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's go and take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line 3. Hello.
Hi, just keeping in the theme here. Today at work, and I'm a low-level IT person. I'm not exactly a beyond that. Today at work, somebody had their email spoofed, meaning that somebody out there on the web generated a false email with the tags for this person's email account. And it's this year's particular blend. It is that they're stranded in London and need money. Please wire immediately. And so I just wanted to remind people that you have to be very careful what you do on the web. You have to be very careful what emails you open. And because I remove a lot of malware and help people remove malware, they should be wary of anything free movies or whatever. If you're going to get something free, do as you folks have already suggested and go to a reputable website, preferably CNET HIPPO file someplace like that that scans the programs. And people, just be careful. Use an antivirus and a firewall, and half your problems will go away. And I, too, have been using Microsoft Security Essentials. Found it very useful, but I just wanted to remind people to be careful because it's just the thing to do. So thanks a lot for the show. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks for the call.
And on that note about spoofed email, I would like to recommend that all email administrators and domain administrators out there go out and look up the SPF, that's the Sender Policy Framework, which does help. It's working on preventing email spam from happening by people. Certainly, you can't send email unless it comes from, or at least it's not, it gets marked as extra spammy maybe if the SPF records aren't correct on the when an email is sent. So that should help spoofed email the SPF records.
Okay, let's take another call. This is a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello. Got a couple of questions, but I did have a comment. I think there are some sites on the web that you want to close out. Certainly your bank will recommend that you close the bank account before you leave it. You don't want to leave it just open. And then it's probably a good idea to close that.
My bank one always closes on me when I'm trying to go, you know, go track something down that they want or I need, and I come back and says, oh, look, your session timed out. You have to log in again. So
yeah, it will do that. But
places like Amazon and some of the newspapers and stuff certainly do not.
I don't worry about those.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing there that's going to hurt me. But the email is going to close down anyway after a while. But it just seems common courtesy to close it and free up some bandwidth. But what I was going to ask about is, have you any experience with McAfee Site Advisor or similar software?
I do not, actually. Well, I guess I've seen some of them, and I think Microsoft has some of this stuff built into IE now where they can send URLs to some web. Let me explain what I think it is, and you tell me if this is the same thing as McAfee's. Basically, a URL is sent to McAfee or the Microsoft one that's part of IE, and or they have a list that's downloaded, one of the two, and then it says, no, that's a bad URL, you shouldn't go there. That's been identified as being problematic.
Well, I think they actually have some web crawlers out investigating sites as well.
Right.
But essentially that's it. When you get a Google list for a subject, it has a series of dots. They're either green, orange, or red. Red is nefarious. Orange is questionable. Green is examined, and either they have not found anything or they recommend it.
All right. Sounds like something good to use if you're searching just in general on Google. Is it in Google, or do you have to?
It's in the browser.
It's in the browser. Okay.
I think it probably works with both, with several browsers. I've been using Firefox. It just seems that Internet Explorer attracts more hackers and such. And
given the more currently it's, I believe it's still the most popular browser. So
it is.
So it does make sense that if you are working on trying to do something bad, that you would find the one that was most popular to start with. So,
mm-hmm.
Right. And I agree. I almost use Firefox all day long. Debbie uses Safari for almost everything. So, but Internet Explorer is certainly catching up in functionality. I remember when Internet Explorer was you opened it once, downloaded Firefox, and then never opened it again unless your bank didn't support Firefox.
Right. The only thing I found that Internet Explorer does that Firefox won't do, a particular credit card has a temporary credit card number, which only works with Internet Explorer. That is, you send a once-only credit card number to a vendor, and it can't be used a second time. And it doesn't work in Firefox, apparently. But I was wondering if you knew of any other software that performs this service. And
I think AVG has one, and other than that, I'm not aware of any. If any listeners want to let us know.
McAfee will also warn you if you're at a site and it appears to be doing something nefarious, even though it hadn't warned you not to go there.
Cool.
So, I've been pleased with it, but I was wondering if there's something better.
None that I've used.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And this is Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guests this morning, Jim Irick and Debbie Flieger of SITES, Campus Information Technologies and Education Services at the University of Illinois. More callers are waiting for us, so let's go and take a call from a listener in Champaign, line 2. Hi.
Yes, hi. I have a laptop that's maybe 3 years old, and at this point, the laptop is no longer turning on. Just recently happened. I think it's a motherboard issue. I've not taken it in, but just from my reading online, that seems to be the problem. And I guess I'm just sort of wondering, I'm one who doesn't like to buy new things like computers, so is it worth replacing a motherboard for a laptop that's 2 to 3 years old, or is it now time to bite the bullet?
That's tough because there's a lot of labor involved in replacing the, and a lot of things that can go wrong when replacing the motherboard on a laptop. My personal opinion would be, unless there's something super special about that laptop, is not to do it.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Thanks for your help.
Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign, line 3. Hi.
Hi there. I had another question about virus protection. I'm a fairly new Mac user, the first one I've owned, and I guess I just always assumed I didn't have to be concerned about Trojans or worms or viruses. And I wondered, though, if there's something I should be doing or checking in my system to make sure I haven't picked anything up.
Well, there are a lot less viruses for a Macintosh, but there aren't none. Actually, viruses are still pretty uncommon, but there are malware. And actually, the biggest thing you can do on your Mac is get a piece of email with a virus attached and not know it and send it off to somebody who has Windows. And then they're mad at you. There are some antivirus products. The university licenses a couple for university use, and even on some of them for your home computer if you're a university-related person. But I am not actually familiar with the other programs for Mac, because on my Macs at home, I don't run antivirus. When my kids are a little older, that might change, because they're going to click. I know what things not to click on, right? And they're not so bright about that. So I can't actually recommend any free antivirus for the Mac, and I know Apple doesn't make anything similar to Microsoft because there is so little issues with it at this point so far. That's probably going to change too.
But you run some kind of anti-malware program then?
No, not on my personal machines.
I do have this, Debbie, from an article that I pulled for today's show. This is from the New York Times. Mac users can download iAntivirus Free Edition. So that's a free antivirus software for Apple.
Yeah, the other one I've heard of is the Clam XAV. It's a free virus checker for Mac OS, and it uses the very popular Clam AV open source antivirus engine on its back end. So I've heard good things about that from other people previously. I did a quick Google, and I'd forgotten about that one. The iAntivirus, I don't know anything about, but you could certainly look it up and do a little research and be sure it sounds, but if it was in that article, it's probably at least reasonably reputable. But yeah, there is a little bit of stuff to worry about. Like I said, not nearly as much, but it does pay to be cautious and occasionally check for things, especially if you've got a lot of people using your machine that, like when my kids get older, and start clicking on things than not necessarily being careful.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. This is Focus, and we're talking this morning about computers. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. will-talk@illinois.edu. And we have another call ready to... caller, ready to take. Line 1 in Urbana. Hi.
Yes, hello. I have an iPod Touch, and I use it all the time for internet access. It seems like it's getting slower, and I'm wondering if there's like an antivirus or spyware or something like that for an iPod.
No, not really. It's hard to get extra stuff onto an iPod. Apple controls that very tightly. That's good from one hand. People who want to do other things get a little frustrated. One of the things I've seen is you get a lot of things running, especially now with the newer OS that does multitasking. Things keep running in the background.
Uh-huh.
So there's two quick answers. The fast thing to do is turn it all the way off and turn it back on and see if it gets faster. If it is, that's almost guaranteed to be what's going on.
Oh, okay.
Which you do by what? Holding down the power button until it says slide to shut off?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so not the main press button on the front.
The one on the top.
But the one on the top. You hold that down, and it'll either turn off or put up a thing that says slide to turn off. Right, so actually let it turn all the way off and turn all the way back on. And if it got faster, that's almost guaranteed to be what was going on. And then the other thing you can do on I've got an iPhone and an iPad, not an iPod Touch, but I'm pretty sure it works the same, is if you double-click that front button, it'll put up a little bar at the bottom with all the things that are currently running, and you can keep sliding page after page. You know, it'll have like four things and then four more things. And if you tap and hold on one of those, kind of like you were going to drag something around in the interface regularly, they'll start shaking and it'll put a little minus sign by each of them, and you can touch that minus sign, and it doesn't delete it or anything. What it does is tell it to stop running right now. So you can look and see, without having to reboot it, how much stuff is actually running right now and turn off the stuff you're not actually using. But
I have it in my hand right now. How did you say? You tap the bottom button twice?
Yeah, kind of like double tapping a mouse button. It's a double click.
Yeah, it didn't do anything.
Have you upgraded it to the newest iOS?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've only had it for a year.
When's the last time you put it into plugged it into your machine and had it, iTunes opened?
Oh, probably a month ago.
I don't know if there's been updates since then or not. You might try that and go into iTunes just to see if there's any updates that it wants to install the software.
I had it reported that everything, that it was current. Everything.
Okay.
Okay.
And then one of the other things you can look at is push notifications for email. I know that some users had where that slowed down the device a little. This was when they started the newest ones, and people were putting the newer version of the software on their older iPhones. They're like, man, my old iPhone's really slow now.
That was the other thing, is if it's only about a year old, it probably shouldn't be so slow that it has trouble with the newer software.
Sure.
Well, but, I worry, and I know I can just simply sign off, but it has that ability. It just keeps the email up and going all the time, and I know I can just sign off and not have it going all the time, but could that possibly be a problem too, especially if I have a lot of emails on it?
It kind of depends. A lot of it depends on which email service you're using, whether it's trying to push things down or if it only goes and gets stuff every once in a while. And that there should be a setting, if it's one of the ones where it fetches the mail, where you say how often you want it to get the mail. And so if you've got that set to 10 minutes or 15 minutes, no, that's not going to be keeping it real busy. But if it's either a push mail system where they're sending the mail to you every time you've got it, or you've got it set to go fetch your mail, you know, every very short amount of time, like 2 minutes or 5 minutes, that might. It really depends on how much mail you're pulling down at any one time. Not so much how much your server has, but how much it needs to grab each time.
I see.
And if you're really concerned with that, you could just shut off Mail Sync and see how it behaves then.
Right. I probably should. I hate having it just sitting open with my, you know, my email, easily accessible if I lost it or something.
Well, that's what the lock screen's for.
And the new version of the OS, I believe, lets you set up an account so that you can wipe it for free if you lose it.
Right.
Through
MobileMe.
Yeah, the MobileMe service is a pay-for service in the general case, but they opened up a free section that lets you do nothing but wipe your phone.
I think that's part of the—is that part of the Find Me?
Yeah, and I don't know if it works for the iPod Touches the way it does for the phones or not. That's something you'd have to check yourself, because it may depend on the phone part, not the Wi-Fi part, to be available.
Well, great. Lots of great information, and I appreciate it.
Glad we could help.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line two. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering when you recall the task manager by Control-Alt-Delete, and you go to processes, they show a long list of items which are running on your computer, basically. I was wondering, is there any published list that we can take a look, see which one of those are necessary, which one are not, and matter is stopping them or eliminate them, is it simply just highlighted and push delete or not?
There, if you type in the exact name as it shows up in Task Manager and search for that on the internet, you'll very often you'll run into a web page that describes exactly what that function is, what it does, and sometimes they'll even discuss the web page will even discuss whether it's required or not, or how you would turn it off or on. Certainly, there are you can click on there and you can say in task, and many of those tasks will go away. There are watchdog tasks that watch for ones disappearing and will restart them because the operating system or some program, right or wrong, believes that that task needs to be running for your machine to be operating. There are certain tasks that if you in-task them, your machine will immediately shut down. But a lot of those are necessary. But if you're concerned about performance tuning and getting more power out of your existing machine, certainly you could go to the process list, Google for each process, and then see what the internet has, what pages people have put up describing that process and whether or not you can actually safely tell Windows to not start. As far as just clicking and in-tasking it, the problem with that is that something started that task to begin with, so most likely the next time you rebooted your machine, it'll start over, it'll be there again, unless you've taken some action to prevent it from running.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And next we go to a listener in Champaign, line 3. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
I have a desktop at home that seems to have a little problem. Whenever I turn it on from a cold start, you know, it hadn't been running for a while, it will just give a long beep or will not beep and will not go ahead and post or load up Windows. But then if I turn it off at the power strip and turn it back on, it boots up fine. I didn't know if you had any ideas of what that problem could be or not.
I have two things to try. One would be to open the machine up and gently push on all the connectors and, like, the memory modules, rock them back and forth just a little bit to make sure everything's seated well.
Okay.
The second one is that more of a long shot is that there's a possibility that there's some issue with the power supply, that it's not delivering. There's two different voltages that operate inside of a machine, 12 volt and 5 volt. So it's possible that the power supply is doing something interesting, we'll say, with one of those voltages when you power it up from a cold start, as opposed to after it's been booted up once, and there's things like capacitors and other things in there that may charge up the first time and it didn't work, but if you turn it off and turn it back on, then it would work.
Okay. The next part is I've pretty much done that. I pushed all the RAM in, pushed all the PSU connectors in. I've actually replaced the power supply with a different power supply.
Capacitors on the motherboard then.
Okay.
You could also try it. Maybe it's some device that's causing an issue on boot up.
Okay.
Long beep codes. You could look at, so if it's making a certain beep code, that's a motherboard error message. And
yeah, I wish it was doing that. It's not, it just gives one long beep and I've looked online and most people say it's what you just said. It's either power supply problem or the RAM's not connected all the way in. It's just been kind of frustrating.
Sure.
Right now what I do is I just I boot it up and I leave the thing on.
Right. Try powering, disconnecting a device at a time. So off the motherboard, things like the CD-ROM, the hard drive, maybe even the keyboard, the mouse, and booting it up from cold and see if having any of those devices disconnected fix it.
Yeah, it might be. I've actually replaced quite a bit of the stuff in it, but I was just wondering if
it may be just down to it's the motherboard, which I assume is one of the ones you have not replaced yet.
I haven't replaced it because it costs more than the computer to replace.
Sure,
that,
absolutely.
Even though it's only a couple years old.
Right. Now, right. You may, you know, if you're looking at new for the cost, you may consider taking the part number off that motherboard and putting it in eBay and see if anybody's has one listed. I've actually successfully found motherboards that were usable for customers that they had a machine that for various reasons it was not we didn't want to replace it with another machine. We just wanted to make that one work the way it used to. And I was able to find some places online, either through using a search engine or through eBay, was able to find some wholesalers that had workable motherboards.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Helps if I turn my microphone on. Debbie?
Yeah. One of my coworkers reminded me that the most important thing for Mac antivirus and security is not antivirus software. It's installing all the Apple updates, their security updates, their Safari updates, their QuickTime updates. And there has been at least one malware that came through that works on Windows and Mac at the same time because it's in Java. So also the Java updates. So that is as important as any single other thing. And that's pretty much true for Windows as well. The security updates put out by the manufacturers are one of the most important steps you can do.
Okay.
And eventually you'll have to stop using certain older versions of the operating system and move up to newer versions.
Like Windows 98.
We've been saying that. Although we haven't had anybody call in lately that said I'm running a Windows 98 machine because my first response is I hope you don't have it on the internet. And it's we're getting to that point with some of the even Windows 2000, I think, is coming up close to being at the end of security patches if it already hasn't passed that. XP will eventually. You just time marches on and you have to move on.
Mac OS 10.4 is not being patched anymore. 10.5 and 10.6 are, but Apple usually only runs two at a time.
Okay, let's take another call. This is a listener in Bloomington on line 4. Hello.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I just had something about the lady with the iPod Touch. I have an iPhone. Are you still there?
We are. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought maybe I lost you. This iPhone does send or drop calls. One thing I do, and I don't know if that, you know, but is go to a reset network settings. Sometimes that seems to help when I have, when it slows down. And general and into, you know, not the whole settings, just the network settings. And something else that I do, and I don't really know if that affects it, but is shut off that the Wi-Fi connection. Sometimes I keep it open because if I'm in an area where I can use whatever is available, I keep it on. But those two things kind of help me. I just thought I'd throw that in.
Okay, well, thanks for the tips this morning. This is Focus. We have a few more minutes remaining in this portion of the program. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Debbie, you brought with you today the iPad.
Yeah, I have a very awesome sister who, with her Christmas bonus, bought me an iPad and herself an iPad. And it was beyond Christmas presents. It was just a, hey, I got a great bonus here.
How lovely.
So I owe my sister on that one.
Yeah. And I got an email today from Apple saying that they've opened the App Store. So what can we expect to find there?
Well, that's an interesting question. You've got to upgrade your Mac to 10.6.6. 10.6.5 was the version that was out yesterday, and you know, 10.6.6 is out today. And so I've gotten the notice, but I got the notice that I could upgrade right before I came over here, so I didn't stop to do that before I came to the show. What they've announced they were doing is the App Store on the iPhones and the iPads has been such a big hit, not just in order to search and find applications, but because it tells you when you need updates for the apps, not just for the Apple software, like software update, that they were going to go to using that as a software distribution method for your Mac. Now, it's not, unlike the iPhone and the iPad, it's not exclusive. You can still buy software from other people. You can buy it in a box. You can download it from other websites. But on Apple's webpage, they're no longer going to just have lists of software they recommend with links that take you off to download it. They're going to have an actual app store similar to what you're used to on the iPhone or the iPad or the iPod Touch. And you'll be able to do the same kind of interactive, pick this, I want to install this, I want to buy this, set up a credit card. And beyond that, since it's brand new today, I can't say much. But it looks interesting. I know there's some people that are a little upset, you know, the people that aren't going to go through their store process, you know, and no, their software will no longer be listed on Apple's website. You're going to have to find it on your own.
Mm.
So I don't know if there's going to be a couple of websites that come up that, you know, kind of replace that. You know, here's the listing of all the software out there, especially the free software or cheap software, you know, people who don't want to spend enough money to go through the Apple store. But I think we'll see. It should be interesting.
Okay. We've got one last caller that we'll get in this morning. Listener in Belgium, line one. Hi.
Hello, and good morning, and I'll make it quick. I've got a computer that runs very, very slow, and I wish to take it to some place where, you know, I can get it fixed up because, you know, I'm pretty much a Luddite, and I don't know what's going on with it. But I had heard that there was some place over, like, in Champaign where you could go and the people could sit there and talk to them, you know, one-on-one.
The Independent Media Center.
Independent Media Center.
Yeah.
That's where it goes.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And is that Champaign or Urbana?
That is in Urbana at near Lincoln Square, and there's the post office there. It's across the street from the courthouse. So, yeah, and I can't, off the top of my head, I don't recall their hours in the day that they do that, but you could look for them online or give them a call. You know, they're in the phone book, so that's how to do that. So, okay, I wanted to ask you something. And since we've got a couple of minutes left and no one waiting, I recently heard about a new search engine that seems kind of interesting, Blecko. Have you heard of it?
No.
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 You beat us.
How about that? Well, it is interesting. It's a startup. It launched not all that long ago. And what they're about is trying to keep spam from showing up in search results. And also, it allows users to get their Facebook friends to play a role in search results. So if your friends favor certain websites with likes, those endorsements signal, here's a good site. And also, you can, in your search, when you put a search term in and you, bless you, when you do a slash and then maybe you put latest, for example, then the most recent things out there will come to you as a result of your search. So
interesting.
And Blecko apparently was their name that they were playing with when they were, you know, just beginning to start it up. And apparently, I think, if I'm recalling correctly, it was the name of a child's sock puppet. And they just thought,
why not?
We'll stick with it. So they spent a lot of money paying. They paid somebody, you know, to come up with 1,000 possible names, and they stuck with Blecko. So I wonder, you know, there are, you know, it's got to be tough to start up a search engine.
Certainly, there's been several come and go in the last couple of years. Amazon had, I think, A9. And I think there's still some functionality that around, but you don't hear it anymore. And then there was one that was cool, but spelled, I believe, C-U-I-L. and that didn't last very long. Or I don't know if it's still around, but certainly you don't hear people going, oh, you should cool that.
Yeah. And I guess Yahoo is out or getting out?
I don't follow the search engines that much, yeah. I got to say. Well, you know, Blecko.com, it's B-L-E-K-K-O.
Right.
And it shows up as a beta, and I typed in free Mac antivirus, and I got very similar results to what I got in Google. So, you know, in terms of is it going to give you something reasonable, on a first quick test, it certainly did.
Yeah. And what do you think of Bing?
I still use Google every day.
I still use Google. Yeah.
You like it or you don't, kind of, you want to switch to it, and everything that Bing did that Google doesn't or the way they do things different, you're like, that's exactly what I wanted. Bing's great. For me, I like the Google plainness, and actually some of the things that they've added in recently are really annoying me. Like the preview, I don't like it. Because when you're moving your mouse down the page and all these things are flashing over on the side, so that's one of the first things I hit X on that. But unfortunately, as far as I know right now, you can't permanently shut off, keep that from happening. If you accidentally click on the preview space of the link, it brings it back up. So I liked the way Google was 2 years ago,
yeah.
And they need to just leave it alone. So things like Bing and stuff, I play with them for a little while and I switch over to, or, you know, for a week or so. And so far I've always ended up migrating back to Google.
Oh, okay. Well, there I think we'll wrap things up for this month. And We'll talk again about computers on the first Thursday of February, and I believe that's February 3rd. And in the meantime, my thanks to Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick. They are with Sites at the University of Illinois, Campus Information Technologies and Education Services. Debbie, Jim, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.